Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Brent. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nyla.
Good morning.
Good morning to everybody in the chat as well. Folks joining us who've been with us in the past might notice a little bit of difference. No music, no dancing, and that's because we're doing things overall a little bit different here, differently today for today's session. We've been really blessed with this video cast that so many people join us every week. And every week we really try to focus on conversations that can help us all be better in our work.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Chris. And especially in the U.S., for those of you that don't know, well, Chris is in Canada. And normally he gives us a weather report. And today I give you the weather report from Arizona, but instead we'll be talking about the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis that happened 2 weeks ago. And once again, it's obvious that there isn't a level playing field in our society. And even though people in the learning and development field are by and large caring and helpful by nature, we're all hoping to take a closer look at how we operate in the world and in our work and make sure that we all do better. So we all appreciate you guys being here, and the numbers are telling. And so it makes me really feel good about our industry. But, you know, speaking of our industry, the L&D industry, after all, is it's a reflection of our society as a whole. We are a large community. It's kind of like a university sort of environment where we have members of all varieties coming to us, and it's such a great group of people. So this week, conversation is going to be a little different. We're honored to be joined by Jessica Jackson. Hi, Jessica. And Nyla Spooner, who's in the lower box there. And Myra's going to be jumping in, Myra Roldan, after Chris and I drop off. And the discussion today is going to be around the intersection of racial justice and L&D. So Chris and I will drop off from hosting, and because we really want to be participants today. And so we will be with you in the chat so we can listen and learn. And our sessions normally run about 45 minutes, but today's session will go as long as we need to go today. So as long as the hosts feel comfortable rolling along, and you all have some good questions and want to keep the conversations going, please feel free to do so. Mm-hmm.
It's an important and critical conversation. Racism isn't just something unique to one country, although sometimes the rest of the world feels it can look in a particular direction and not see itself reflected there. Domino is based in Canada. The world thinks of Canadians as nice people, but we have our own share of racism to face up to. Last week, the provincial member of parliament from my area tweeted a racist reply to a federal minister who shared his experiences as a Black man in Canada. And also last week was the one-year anniversary of the report of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. And a year later, not a single one of those recommendations that came from that inquiry and its calls for justice, none of that has been acted upon yet. And that's a deep shame for our country. Racism is not confined by borders. And as we said, today's conversation is such a critically important one to have. So we'll now turn the session over to Jessica, Myra, and Nyla. And Brett and I will pop into the chat.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris and Brent and Domino. I'm going to invite Myra to join us on screen. And while I'm inviting Myra on screen, I want to share that I'm so incredibly thankful for this community that I belong to, that it's willing to hold space for difficult conversations and emotionally charged topics. Racial injustice is not new. It's something that is not easy for any of us to address. And I wanna welcome both longtime and new idiotic viewers to a different type of idiotic, one that opposes the idiocy of racial injustice. And with that, I'm gonna invite Myra. Myra, can you send me a note in the chat really quickly so I can add you? There you are. I'm inviting you on screen with us. Before we begin, and as we wait for Myra to join us on screen, I want to just step back. We know that racism is not new in the US, nor in Canada, nor in the world. But I'm situated in the US, and that's the context that I speak from. And our country was built on the backs of enslaved people, my ancestors, who have for centuries fought for equal rights. What we're seeing today in the US is 400 years of exhaustion from this fight. So I want to take a moment of silence to honor the lives that we've lost in this fight. We honor the lives of George Floyd. We honor the life of Breonna Taylor. We honor the life of Ahmaud Arbery, of Tony McDade, of Drayshawn Reed. We honor the lives of all of those who we have lost. Thank you for joining me in this moment. And I want to say that today is grounded in the personal experiences of those who are here with me. Today's conversation is an opportunity to learn and reflect on the ways that racial injustice intersects with our work in learning and development. Our hope is that we all, as a community, work towards a better future. The purpose of the conversation is not designed to trigger guilt. It's designed to propel forward. If you are here with us today, tell us in the chat what you hope to gain and share some of your thoughts about why you're here. And yeah, thanks, Myra. And then I want to go over and ask my co-facilitators. Myra, can you tell me a little bit about you and what you're hoping to gain from this space?
Yeah, so I've been on the show on the Crowdcast with Brent and Chris in the past, and we've had some really interesting conversations around L&D. And it's always interesting. I'm a woman in tech, right? So my career started off as a woman in tech, and being a woman in tech alone is difficult. Being a Hispanic woman in tech is kind of a double threat to those who I work with, right? And so it's really interesting because, you know, we all know that racism is alive and well everywhere we go. And it's those microaggressions that get us. People may not be overtly racist, but it's the little microaggressions that become very interesting to have to deal with. And I've been in the industry going on 20 years. And so a lot has changed, right? We've seen some change over the years. Things aren't as bad as they were back in the early 90s when I started working, started my career. And I hope today to just get some clear ideas and some thoughts for everyone, because I've been getting a lot of messages from people asking me, like, apologizing, and it throws me off. I really feel that words are weak, actions are strong. And so, you know, I think that when you're thinking about, you know, like the issues we're dealing with, I think you need to think more broadly about, it's not what you say, it's what you do. And so, you know, I marched in a protest in New York this weekend. It was amazing. It was a very diverse, but mainly white protest, which was beautiful also to be able to feel the support. And I think that's, you don't have to do anything that's huge and grandiose and you know, where everyone notices. I want people just to learn that, you know, we need to treat each other with respect. We need to raise our voices when we see injustice and not be afraid to speak up. I have a big mouth. I speak up for everyone, and I expect that of everyone else for me. And, you know, I want us to not feel collective guilt, right? I want us to feel collective responsibility. And through collective responsibility is where you take action to actually make things change. So that's for me what I'm trying to get out of this.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Myra. Nyla, same question. What are you hoping to gain from this space?
You know, I'm in a raw place emotionally and professionally. And so I don't have expectations at this point. I'm just here to see what people are still confused about, because that issue of confusion unsettles me. But I know it's a point that we have to get past, and I want to help people move past that space, because when you're still in that awareness phase, you're unsure of what you can say, what you can't say, what should I do, what I can't do. That's when you stall and action doesn't happen. And so I'm hoping after this conversation can help you better understand that, one, like Jessica said at the top of the conversation, that, you know, Blackness is not a monolith. We all have individual experiences. So today we can't solve racial equality for you, but what we can do is give you some insight on how it has affected us personally. And then hopefully those stories can help inform whatever action you take from there. So just here to have a two-way conversation about it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for your voice. Thank you so much for your time. I'm seeing in the chat that there are lots of folks that want to learn. They want to listen. They want to make a change. They want to take action. They really want to own that collective responsibility. I really appreciate folks saying this is an opportunity to amplify some melanated voices, to learn to be anti-racist. So I hope that we can all gain more awareness about a very diverse and varied experience. And I appreciate you, Nyla, for acknowledging your emotions at this time. I think that we're all here because we see value in creating a dialogue within our community, and because we want to continue and do work. So I want to ask you a question about, go back to that emotion. Tell me about your heart today. If you could describe it in a color, what color is your heart? And why do you think this conversation is relevant to your work in L&D?
My heart color. It like waffles. Sometimes it is, what's an angry color? Sometimes it's an angry color. It's red. Sometimes it is dark. Sometimes it's, I can still find joy. So it's a happy color, but, remind me the second part of your question.
Why is this conversation relevant to your work in L&D?
Sure. So in everything that I do, I don't have the like luxury of separating my Blackness from what I do. And I don't have a problem with that. So like, I'm really passionate about creating resources for Black women, women that look like me, and showing them that, you know, there's more to HR, there's more to business than the roles that are typically brought to us. Mm-hmm. And that what I'm, as a learning and development professional, this role has changed my life. It has exposed me to a totally new community I didn't know existed. And it exposed me to skills that I didn't know that I could have that could also widen my career possibilities and really give me the opportunity to make more money. And so I try every day to show other Black women and other women of color that, hey, this can put you in a different position in your life. And that, so that informs everything I do. That's why I work out loud. That's why I show people what I do and why I don't put it behind a paywall, because I want other Black women to see me doing that. And, but you know, I was thinking when this first started that a lot of you, this is the first time you might be seeing me or Jessica or Myra. And a part of me wants you to see me for my work as an L&D professional, separate from my Blackness, but this is where we are. So it's complicated feelings, a lot of nuanced conversation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. I feel that. That resonates a lot with me. Thank you for sharing that.
I did want to say real fast, I just saw a comment before it goes away. It's from, I don't know if I'm saying your name right, Takia, but she said that she's from the county where George Floyd was killed. And she's the only Black person doing diversity training for a department over 3,500 people. Mm-hmm. And this is something I definitely want to address in this conversation, that the burden on Black people to fix this or to patch it up or to put a Band-Aid on it is very heavy. Mm-hmm. And just because I'm Black doesn't mean I'm a diversity specialist, an equity specialist, or an inclusion specialist. Mm-hmm. So, and I see this on the burden of Black women a lot. And so however we can support you, Takiya, we will. But I want you to be confident in having a voice to say, hey, I should not be the only person doing this. Mm-hmm. Provide me support of people who can help me with this, because we are tackling a huge issue that didn't start with us. Mm-hmm. So I would love to talk about that more.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Did you have any thoughts, Myra? How's your heart today? What color is your heart? And why do you think this conversation is relevant to your work in L&D?
Yeah, I would say that my heart is exhausted because this is not, for me, having been, you know, I'm a lot older than you guys, and having gone through, I'm a 70s baby. So having lived through so much aggression and, you know, I grew up in Puerto Rico. So I'm going to be like, I grew up in Puerto Rico. Everyone's Puerto Rican there. I did not encounter racism until I moved to the States, which is very interesting because it really threw me off guard. I was not prepared for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, someone, Ramika, I think, asked about, like, wants us to elaborate on microaggressions. So I would tell you my heart is exhausted. Mm-hmm. So from a color, it is like a faint blue because it just doesn't have any, it's just exhausting, right? Like, it's every time we have something tragic happen, it feels like that's when people want to talk about things and when people want to try and fix things. You know, when the whole mm-hmm. Rodney King incident, when the whole Ferguson incident, that's when people are wanting to, like, oh, let's put it at the front light and let's talk about it. But then it's like those microaggressions, and let's talk about those microaggressions really quick. Microaggressions are things that you may not know you're doing, right? It may be like unconscious, but a lot of it, some people are just, it's like little digs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, comments about our hair, mm-hmm. comments about accents, comments about skin color, comments about, you know, our background, comments about sometimes they come off as stupid comments. I'm just going to say, you know, it's like, it's just a fucking stupid comment. Like, keep it to yourself. I don't need to hear it. Mm-hmm. You know, keep that thought here. Don't let it come out here, especially when you're addressing me, because it is because then we are forced to have to put on our brave face, and we're expected to just, like, take it with a grain of salt and not react, because if we react, we're angry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my instance, I'm a hot Latina, and your instance, you may be a you know, mad Black woman. And mm-hmm. that's just not right. Right. Mm-hmm. Because if it were a white woman, the white girl tears come on, and then it's mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I offended you. Where with us, it's, they expect us to have thick skin and expect us to just take it. And that, to me, is bullshit. Like, it's tiring. It's exhausting to live an existence where you're always having to work 20 times harder than your counterparts. Mm-hmm. And have to deal with all those, you know, little things along the way that people think are okay, and they really aren't. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's difficult. And so it's just, I'm just really exhausted right now. You know, I've been marching in protests. I've been, you know, signing petitions. I've been doing whatever I can. I've been writing to legislators. I mean, but we all know that we live in a world where racism is an education that is very, mm-hmm. that's taught very early on. And so you can't, like, it goes way back. And so it's not something that's going to get fixed today. Mm-hmm. It won't get fixed in 10 years. It won't get fixed in 20 years. As long as there are different colors in this world, it is going to exist. Mm-hmm. It's just human nature. And that's why I think that having these conversations are important, but it always blows me away that it doesn't happen until there's a tragedy and we stand up and we start, like, putting our foot down and saying, like, this is bullshit. It needs to stop. But then that dies out also, right? And things just return back to how they were. And in another, you know, year or so, there's going to be another tragedy and everyone's going to go up in arms again. And right now, I think everyone's up in arms because we've been quarantined. People are angry. People are ready to leave their house. People are, a lot of people are out of work, so they have nothing else to do. So it's like, here's a cause, I'm going to jump on it. And, you know, this is wrong. And, but then their lives are going to go back to normal and they're going to forget about it. And things are just going to go back to the way they were.
Yeah. I think that you bring up like the fact that folks can forget about it is a privilege, right? And I really like someone in the chat talked about microaggressions as the death of a thousand cuts. And when you live an intersectional experience, sometimes that even compounds, right? Like as a woman of color, as a queer woman, all of these things are constantly being questioned multiple times a day. And it's not something we get to forget, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing that, like, what are some of the ways that you're holding space for yourself, that you're taking care of yourself in this moment and all of the time, because it's not just about this moment.
I do want to say one more thing about microaggressions real fast and then I can share. So what I realized that we have trainings around sexual harassment, active shooters. I've never been to a training about microaggressions. I've worked on a training about something called nibbling, which is the little biting comments we say, but it was all around ability. But it is nibbling to be in an elevator full of people and have someone turn around and say, is that your real hair? It is invasive. Some of the comments I see here, and in terms of L&D, we don't address these sensitive topics as if not talking about them is better, and it's not. And I would love to see us really dig into addressing some of these with the learning experiences we create.
Yeah, actually on that same topic, my background is in higher education, and I was at U of D, and someone is actually doing research on microaggressions, but something she also, Rosalie Dow is her name. She's the researcher. She's doing micro affirmations as a way to combat microaggressions. So there are different scaled levels of microaggressions. There are ones that feel like an insult. It's an insult. And then there are ones that are violent. And so she has a scaled approach to identify microaggressions, and then conversely has micro affirmations, which are around how are you creating that supportive environment to respond. Would love to see L&D take on some of that research and turn it into a practice. That is a really great idea, Nyla.
And I feel like micro is a misnomer. Mm-hmm. It's because people have this view of what racism looks like, that it's in a hood, that it's burning crosses, that it's killing people. And the fact is all of these work together. You making comments about hair or, you know, things like that, they work together to other people, to put them in a category other than the dominant race or dominant culture. And when you other people, it's easier to dehumanize them. And so you may think, well, what does talking about someone's hair have to do with the murder of George Floyd? But when all these things stack up on top of each other, they lead to a culture and understanding, to biases that lead us down the road of police brutality, of racial injustice as a whole. So I don't want anyone to hear microaggression and think that it means small. It's just not overt in the way that people think about racism.
And it's constant, right? Like that, it's continuous. It's something that we're working towards. So I do want to get back to the point on how you're taking care of yourself in this moment. What are some of the things you're doing?
I'm really bad at that. And I think a lot of Black women are. We don't have, like, a lot of Black women I know rush to fix the problem. And I am involved in so many more things than I was a month ago. And when this all happened, I was laid off. I was dealing with being in the house, taking care of my parents. And then on top of this, I felt like I had a responsibility to speak up. So I'm not sleeping. I am not people are giving me space to be like, rest if you need to, but I can't rest. I cannot put myself at rest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I take my breaks and I watch my movies, but if I can't fall asleep, I will get on that computer and start working. So I'm not great at taking breaks or taking care of myself. But little things that I remind myself of is to keep drinking my water and to be grateful for the people around me. So.
Oh, no, I think. I want to go on that idea of rest. The NAP ministry actually practices rest as resistance. As we occupy bodies of color, we need to prioritize the care of our bodies and the rest. So that is, I've been practicing breath work. I've been taking deep breaths. I've been doing my yoga. I also am struggling with sleeping, but I know that I have to take care of myself because that is an act of resistance.
Yeah. I think on my end, I live in Seattle. And so protests have been very heavy and they've been turning violent. Last week was really bad. I was not sleeping. So I booked a ticket to the East Coast. So I'm with my aunt right now. I was a little nervous, right, with the whole, because we have so much going on. So I had to consider, you know, do I stay in Seattle and continue protesting and, you know, having the riots escalate? I live right downtown, so I'm in the thick of it. And I live by myself. And I figured, you know, do I risk, like, getting my aunt sick, right? Like traveling, getting people sick. But I had to get out of my own headspace. So I've been here since. I've been on the East Coast since Friday. I landed really late Saturday. You know, we marched. And Sunday I came to Connecticut where it's a lot more peaceful. So I would say I got the first good night of sleep here Sunday night, which was good. Being around family, I meditate a lot. So meditation is one of my things. I've been drinking more than I should be lately. A lot more. You know, it's, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to keep it real with you guys. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I drink, right? It's like you drink, you try to, I've been reading a lot. So right now I've been rereading White Rage, which is such an interesting book because it's based on historical data. And it's really interesting. And I'm also building like conference sessions because I'm speaking at a bunch of conferences. So that kind of stuff has been keeping me distracted. So I'm always grateful for like the distraction of work because it helps me focus on something else instead of sitting down stewing in like my own thoughts, right? Having a lot of conversations with friends too, it's very interesting. And I get a lot of people asking me, like, how do you feel? It's like, well, how do you feel? Right? Like, you throw that shit back at you. And how do you feel about it? Because I'm exhausted. So it's we have to take care of ourselves, right? And I also feel that it's not our responsibility. I'm going to get on my soapbox. It is not our responsibility. It's not Nyla's responsibility. It's not Jessica's responsibility to educate our white counterpart. I'm sorry. It is not our responsibility to do that because our white counterparts, although we get educated a lot on white culture, it is not our responsibility to educate you on what we go through. And on, you know, like it like when you think about it, we have parents with minority children. I posted something on Facebook about a little girl getting maced during one of the protests in Seattle. She was 10. And someone posted a comment talking about like, I would never take my child to a protest, right? So, you know, I posted it. So of course I'm going to tell you like, well, I opt to take my kids to protest because my kids need to understand that they need to stand up for themselves. They need to stand up for their rights and need to give a voice to people who don't have a voice. So that's why we protest. And you may not be able to relate to it, but you don't have to relate to it. I could give a rat's ass if you can relate to it. If you can't relate to it, you have other issues. So I'm very angry also, which doesn't So I've been having to control my mouth and, mm-hmm. In meetings when people make stupid comments about I can't go to Kohl's because of the protests. Like, what is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a microaggression, assault.
Yeah. I can't go to Kohl's to do my returns because of all the protesters and I'm scared. It's like, what world do you live in? There's shit going on in this world and you're worried about doing a return to Kohl's, right? So it's just things like that. And it's really, it's exhausting. It makes me angry. Mm-hmm. I am extremely angry. That's why I don't know if I'm very active on social media, on LinkedIn and Twitter. And it's very hard for me to refrain. I do a work from home tip on Instagram every day. And even that's gotten difficult for me because I just want to tell everyone to just fuck off and just shut it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I need to keep face, and because not everyone is a racist, right? I think we're all racist, right? In some way, shape, or form. Like, everyone in the world is racist, because even Blacks are racist, Hispanics, we are racist. We have our own quirks. So that's why I say it should be a collective responsibility, because we all have to own our biases and our own racism, mm-hmm. and our own racist thoughts, because I can tell you, we're racist. All races are racist. Right. So it's not just a white issue. It's mm-hmm. a collective issue. And so I think we just need to figure out how do we play fair? Mm-hmm. Right. Let's just play fair.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'm getting a lot of questions in the Q&A. A lot of them are going towards solutions. I'm going to acknowledge right now that I want to hear from my sisters on this panel with me. I'm going to hold space to hear their perspectives and experiences, because I think that is important. And then we will get to the solutions, the thoughts toward later in the conversation. So thank you both for sharing how you're feeling. Thank you both for sharing resources. I see so many people pulling resources from just your natural interactions. Today, my heart is yellow in remembrance and optimism for the increased conversation. But it's also in the air of caution. I'm fired up that these spaces are being cultivated, but I'm critical. Dialogue without action is not going to create change. And I do wonder if we'll ever truly dismantle an age-old and pervasive system of oppression. I think this conversation is relevant because it's relevant in every fabric of our institutions, from those who lead organizations to those who teach future generations. There's an imbalance of whose voice is heard and valued at the table. This power differential, an imbalance in who makes decisions and whose perspective matters, is present in our economy, our government, our criminal justice system, our education system, our healthcare system, in every structure. And this is what I mean when I say racial injustice. I'm talking about the structural concerns and barriers that perpetuate inequality. So now that we kind of have that shared language, I want to invite Myra to tell us from your experience in L&D, how you've noticed race and racial injustice intersecting with your work.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So again, I'm going to share IT background. I was an engineer, moved into the L&D space. I hate to call us minorities or people of color. That is just not terms that I like to use. Blacks and Hispanics, we have very little representation in L&D, right? Just when it comes to the number of Blacks and Hispanics that actually work in L&D, I think it's a lack of awareness, resources. There's a whole root cause, right? Just in the everyday training that people prepare, it is so white centric, right? It only addresses those issues, and it doesn't, there's a slew of other issues that we encounter, and we're not given tools to figure out how do we navigate those extra barriers that are presented for us. Training is very general, right? And I can appreciate, training around helping women navigate spaces, but then we have whole, American Indians that have a hard time navigating space. We have a whole slew of other, people from different countries that, and the whole Hispanic, we're Latinos, we're Latinx, we're Afro-Latinos. They don't know what to call us anymore. I straddle, you know, the Afro Latino Hispanic sphere. My family is a rainbow. We're all Puerto Rican, but we're a rainbow of colors. And we're a mix of races, right? And so it's very interesting that, you know, the conversations are about Black Lives Matter right now. And they really do matter, because those are the lives that are most in danger right now, right? And we need to bring awareness to that, because racial profiling is huge, and we racially profile people in L&D also, right? Mm-hmm. So when you do sessions on persona, you're like, let's build personas, right? And people are like, I'm gonna put a purple person because I don't see color. You do see color, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't tell me you don't see color. You see color very well. And you mm-hmm. do see the intersection of race very well. And you saying you don't see color is very cliche. I think it's about, how do you represent different cultures? Because the U.S. is a melting pot. How do you represent different cultures equally and address the issues that they may encounter, right? Like, we need to have better training that addresses some of the issues that we encounter. And even when it's just dealing with regular processes, those regular processes don't always apply to us. There's mm-hmm. always a different process for us. And it's very interesting. And that's something that just gets swept under the rug. And I think that what I would like to see more in L&D, and the way we can change that narrative, is by having more Blacks, Hispanics, American Indians, you know, people of different cultures in the L&D space who have a voice, right? Like, we are in a position where we can give different cultures a voice, and we can address the issues of racism through training. And I think the other thing that we need to really address is, like, a lot of people don't do it because they're afraid of retribution.
Mm-hmm.
You speak mm-hmm. up. If I speak mm-hmm. up, I'm going to lose my job. I can't mm-hmm. lose my job over you or you or you or you, or you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm older than you guys, and I go in with the, like, fire me, like, hey, just do it. Like, mm-hmm. I will bring it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a very different, I'm jaded, right? Also, I'm seasoned, I'm well seasoned and jaded. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I really want to see is, I want to see us provide more opportunity and awareness to lower income communities mm-hmm. where a lot of our families live, right? That's where our people are still living, and where we've been locked into our lower income communities. And so I think by bringing an awareness of, like, this is something you can do. Let me show you what you can do. This is technology. I'm giving you access. I'm giving you information. I think that's, we have to do a better job of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing such great commentary in the chat. I like what Tamika, you're saying. Like, you need to see our color. That's a part of who we are. I like the conversation of, aren't we tired of hearing that systemic racism can be solved by training? It hasn't been working, right? Like, these things exist, and we've been training. So I see really great commentary in the chat, but I do want to give Nyla a chance to respond on the ways that racial injustice and race kind of show up or intersect in your work.
Right now, I'm working with a collective of designers. It's called Design for Humanity, and we're working together to use our skill set to develop training around these issues. I don't think that training doesn't work. I think that it trying to solve systemic racism is not what's going to happen. What it can do is address biases and, like we were talking about, microaggressions that help perpetuate the atmosphere of systemic racism. So no, I don't think L&D training can solve police brutality. Mm-hmm, I do mm-hmm. think that if you're stuck in a space where you're willing to have your worldview changed, but you're confused about how to do that, then maybe, yes, you do need to sign up for a course to understand what a microaggression is. Mm-hmm. We try to change worldviews in L&D. Like, that is the grand idea. A lot of it doesn't get done. a lot of the time. But ideally, mm-hmm. that's what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to change the way someone views something. And that is a huge task. And I don't want anyone to think that I can do it. I don't understand whiteness. I don't have those lenses. Just like you're confused by some of what we're saying, I see how it affects me, but I don't have the lens. I don't see from that point of view. Mm-hmm. So where I'm still, I get confused when people don't understand things that I say, because we live it every day. I live it every day, but it's not my experience to have never heard it before. Mm-hmm. So like, when people say, hey, do you want to help me with this training? I'm like, are you training Black people to understand racism or white people? Well, I strongly believe that you can approach this and work on it without burdening me to have to be your total subject matter expert. And I can give you my experience, but I believe that your training as an instructional designer, you can approach this in a way where you understand your user as a white person, and that you can go talk to white people about, hey, what do you not understand about this? How can I change your worldview? Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I don't mind being a part of building the infrastructure to make this training available, but I mm-hmm. can't solve it myself, because I don't see whiteness in that way. And
I appreciate that, those thoughts. I also appreciate in the beginning of the conversation, you said, like, I'm not a specialist around DEI, right? And I think that that's one of the ways that race and racism shows up in my work, because I have over a decade of doing DEI social justice training, right? This is my passion. This is what I'm called to do. And one of the ways that I've experienced race in my work as an instructional designer is through representation, both in the media, which I see folks are talking about in the chat, but also in who's doing the training. For example, some of the data shows that white audiences are more receptive to learning about DEI from white people. Quite honestly, that's triggering to me. I've invested a lot of money. I'm still in debt for my education in order to gain this skill set. I navigate my life as a Black and queer woman and have over a decade of experiences leading diversity initiatives and certified in intergroup dialogue facilitation, and hold many other specializations that make me a qualified DEI trainer. But because we are talking about white comfort there, we are prioritizing white comfort in our DEI training. So when I see fewer folks leading DEI, I'm critical. I want to know why you're prioritizing white comfort, quite honestly, over expertise, and not giving opportunity to folks who could do that work. And what I'm not saying, because we know that Nyla, you and I have a different background, not all Black people should be pigeonholed to DEI work. Not everybody wants to do that, right? But for those of us who are passionate, who have the credentials, there should be opportunity for us, and we should challenge why white people are more comfortable talking about diversity with white people.
I have a perspective on this. And again, because I'm not a DEI expert, I don't have that experience that you have, Jessica. I don't have that background to it. I'm just a Black woman who shows up at work. And I'm coming from my experience, but I've had this conversation with the design collective, and they said, you know, we will step back and have you take care of all of this and you run it and you speak. And I said, no, do not step back. I need you there right beside me, because white people like to hear from other white people. And it is a reality that I had to think about that, because I thought, this is an opportunity for me to stand up and show up in that way. But I'm not a DEI specialist. That's not what I do. None of us are. We have to go to matter experts to help us. Mm-hmm. I said that, like, we can create this training, but just like you would work for find an SME to help you build a training for engineers, we have to find SMEs for this. But you cannot step back completely, because there is already a bias. There's already a wall put up when people hear Black people Hispanic people, Latinos, Latinx people talk about these issues because they say, oh, this is just them pulling the race card. I don't want to deal with them talking about race. I don't believe those things. This is liberal talk.
And why not? And that's what I'm critical of.
I agree. But I also understand that I have to be able to get in there. Mm-hmm. And this is difficult. And this is why this is a nuanced conversation. Mm-hmm. And why people, our audience can't just say, this is what Jessica said in this conversation. This is what Nyla said. This is what Myra said. This is what I'll go apply to my organization. Mm-hmm. You have to understand what works for the situation that you're in at that time. Where is your audience at? Are they willing to change their worldview already? Are they already in a spot where they're open to attending these trainings, to understanding where people are coming from? Mm-hmm. Or are you already dealing with an audience, with learners who have a wall up, whose worldview is solid and they're not willing to change? I know I worked in an organization that had lots of ERGs that covered LGBTQIA community, the Black community, but I still worked in oil and gas where Fox News was on every day. So it's a community where, yeah, maybe the wall is sort of down and I could start to have these conversations, but I've also had conversations with my colleagues in which I know where they stand and that they're not going to be open, not that they're even explicitly racist, but they're not in a mind space to have candid conversations yet with a Black woman about their experience. So because we're IDs and L&D professionals, we're LXD professionals, what is that user? Who is your user?
Mm-hmm. You know? I agree. I think that all curriculum is scaffolded, right? Like we're not going to have someone in their entry-level biology class go in and perform open heart surgery. They need to go through years of practice and years of experience to do that. And I just am curious about, and I see in the chat, like not all white folks are uncomfortable with folks of color, but that's been my experience.
You guys don't have to say not all white people in this conversation.
Yeah.
I want to shut that down right now. We know that there are exceptions, and we know that you hear us saying generalities, but just like we said when we started this conversation, that these are experiences from three individual people, Black people, Hispanic people. We need you to understand that we know you have individual experiences. We're talking about systemic issues. So I know that there's going to be that immediate, like, I'm white and I'm doing this. You know, there are exceptions. We understand that. We work with you. We know you. We're friends with you. We understand. We're talking about this systemically.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say not all white people or this is my experience. I do understand that. I mean, share your experiences. I'm not saying don't. I'm just saying don't feel like you have to immediately say, you know, I don't know if that's correct. These are how we've experienced it.
Yeah. And let me just add to I did say it, right? All races have a level of racism. Mm-hmm. Like it is just point blank, right? Being Puerto Rican, I can tell you we are a proud fucking bunch. And we have, we're racist against other Hispanics, right? Like it's just down, right? Like, yeah. And so I think that you're right. Like, I think this is, it's just racial tensions are high right now. And so like, I think, and I understand that our white, you know, peers are on high alert. Right, they're like, I'm gonna say the wrong thing, offend someone, and they're gonna get mad, or they're gonna report me, or whatever it is. Right, we're instilling this whole fear, and it's so sad to me that we live in a culture that's driven by fear. Religion is driven by fear. Politics is driven by fear. Relationships are driven by fear, even by, you know, like relationships with white friends. It's tenuous because there's still levels of racism. Like my best friend is white, you know, Anne Rollins, you guys all know her. She's a ginger I love, right? And mm-hmm. and just the simple fact that I call her a ginger that I love, that's a form of racism, right? That's I'm calling her out by a trait, right? Mm-hmm. But she and I have a level of confidence and a level of trust with each other that we do it in jest. But even in jest, we both know that the shit that comes out of our mouth is sometimes highly racist, right? We just don't take it as being racist because we're doing it to each other. We really try to refrain our inside jokes for, you know, the outside world. But I think that even in relationships like that, like, I think, you know, when we talk about like diversity and inclusion training, diversity and inclusion training, I'm sorry, is bullshit. I think what really needs to happen is we need to have conversations, right? Bring mm-hmm. two groups together, have a moderated conversation, right? What are some of the issues that you're dealing with, right? Bring to light what people in your organization are dealing with that others, like, you know, people may not be aware of. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the best version of diversity and inclusion, because if there's the problem with training is that it is removed, right? Mm-hmm. So you are seeing it, you can't relate to it, you're going through the motions, it's unrelatable. But when you put people face to face for some kind of inclusion activity or conversation, as long as you can create a safe space, I think that's a lot more impactful, because there's someone they can relate to, right? It may be someone that I have coffee with every day, and I never realized that, oh shit, half of the shit I say is offensive, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But now I have a person I can relate it to. So I think that we do a really shit job on training, and everything we do is training. And I think that what we really need to do is have conversations like this. Like, a lot of people are watching the three of us, right? Mm-hmm. We are something they can, people we can, like, breathing people they can relate to. We are sharing our frustration. We are being mm-hmm. heard, mm-hmm. right? We're raising awareness. And I think this type of conversation is what needs to happen in mm-hmm. our organizations, right? In order for it to be effective. But it yeah. needs to be created in a safe space.
Myra, I think that you're pulling into a nice transition into that how do we respond section of the conversation. And most of the questions that are coming in are, what can we be doing? I don't want to implement a haphazard training program. What can I do to do it better? How can we, or how should white people balance using our privilege to advocate while also lifting others up and avoiding white centering? What can be done to respond to what's going on? So you're speaking to that. Are there other ideas that we have here? What are you currently doing in your work?
I have a lot of conversations, and I'm lucky enough to I have built trust with a lot of people that I work with, right? And I tend to be crude. I'm a little crude. I'm a little rough around the edges, right? I'm a tough pill to swallow sometimes, because I am very vocal, and I hold no punches. And you know what they say, with age comes bitterness. And like, I'm seasoned, I'm aged, so I can be bitter. And I can just say whatever the hell I want. And like, it's just, you know, it's harder when you're younger to be able to voice your like, make sure that your voice is heard, because I think also people not only see you as like you're pouting, right? Like you're having a little temper tantrum. Let them. I think we're poor about that. Is that I think that no matter what the age, people need to be heard, right? And we need to give people a safe space to be heard without fear of, you know, like, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose my friends. I'm going to be seen as the Black or the Hispanic girl in the room. I'm going to be seen as the angry person. I'm going to be seen as, do you know what I mean? Like, I think, so what I've been doing with my team is I built a lot of trust, and we're very open, and I encourage everyone to tell me to fuck off if they just don't want to listen to me right now. So, you know, so we've built this culture of no fear and no retribution, where you can speak up. But even now during this time, there's some tensions, right? Mm-hmm. And so I try to ease it off with jokes, like, you know, because I still love them all. Just because there's these racial tensions doesn't mean that I'm all of a sudden public enemy number one, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's about keeping it safe, making sure that people, I mean, some things are going to be offensive, but sometimes you just have to let people talk, right? Because it is their opinion. It is, and they may be processing like what it is. And so we can't have our hackles up at all times. And I think that's what I'm coming to terms to. And I think that's what's helping me to really find peace, is that I know that it's their, you know, it's their worldview. They will never be able to travel in my shoes. You know, they can't have their blisters for me. They, you know, they can't feel my blisters. They can't feel my pain. They may not know what it's like to, you know, have to sit there and figure out, do I pay my rent? Do I pay my light bill, or do I buy food? Right. Because having been, you know, in this systemic racist society that really makes it difficult for us to rise, may not have had that same experience. And no, you know, a lot of people haven't had, my kids haven't had that experience. And so I don't hold that against anyone. I think it's just a matter of like, let's move forward and let's just figure out like, how do we treat each other? Again, I'm going to say this with respect. How do we treat each other with dignity? And how do we give a voice to people who may not have a voice? Like, this is my big thing, right? Because the three of us are speaking up. A lot of people will not speak up at work. A lot of people will not share their thoughts. A lot of people are afraid of having this conversation with friends and family. I think we need to just create that, let's say, like, let's have a conversation. It's going to be a safe space. Whatever stays here, but we also have to like really own up to that. Like, if it's going to be a safe space, we can't then take it and use it against them. Like, you know, saying like, I don't know, white Betty said whatever to me, and now I'm going to hold that against her. Like, no, it's her thought. You know what I mean? Sorry, Betty. But, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's conversation.
Awesome.
Cornell had an interesting viewpoint that I wanted to address, unless you wanted to go on, Jessica, if you have a...
No, are you going to talk about venting? Is that the, yeah.
From my point of view, since we're L&D professionals here, we're very open to, we should be, to addressing our community, to getting, to doing focus groups, to talking to our users, to collecting that data so we develop informed training. We do our front-end analysis, we do our needs analysis, our task analysis. This is a part of all that. And so next is the next part of Addy or Sam or whatever you follow. To me, that makes perfect sense. So the next step is your development or your design. It doesn't have to look like traditional training. It just has to look like whatever you think that action should be like that is actionable. So that's what I would say to people saying, what do we do with all these vent sessions? Someone else also said, you know, tell them to log off because, you know, this listening is an integral part of that. And I understand that people are very ready for action. And so am I. And so that's why I create a mentoring group in which I can help Black women trying to get into instructional design. And that's why I actively set a goal to mentor 100 Black women in 5 years. When I say that, people hear that number and they freak out. And I'm like, why? That's 20 women a year that I have to have a conversation with. Why is that so outrageous to you? It's not hard. I can create a system in which I do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I'm helping. I'm helping by elevating other women who have questions, again, by not hiding it behind a paywall, but also showing them, hey, make an investment in yourself when you're ready. This is how you can learn about this. This is how you can get a degree in this. And so I know what I'm doing. I know what my actions are. And again, to me, it's simple. I can move to that action quickly. That idea came up. I can't explain to people the actions that they need to take.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my role. I'm giving you the user research. I'm giving you the background. I'm giving you the information. you're an L&D expert, you're an instructional designer, you have the tools to create whatever the learning experience. It doesn't have to be training, doesn't have to be e-learning, it doesn't have to, you know, the experience, you have the tools to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the question that you actually put in the chat, Nyla, where you said, how would you treat this if it was a performance issue? That's what we're trained to do, right? I'm lucky to work at Torrance Learning, where we host a lot of free events for educational opportunities. I think that that's one way that, while not blatantly, a step towards equity and inclusion or addressing racism, I think that it offers intersections. Like, that's how I found myself in L&D, was attending a free conference that they hosted. And one of the sessions at the free conference was on bias. And so in that moment, I felt very seen. I do think that a lot of the work that we have to do is around hearing and seeing the experiences of folks of color. And I think that you also might, I'm the host of the XAPI cohort data and assessment. I'm a data nerd. How are you evaluating your organization? Are you looking at who are the top leaders? Whose voice is at the table? Are you looking at your vendors that you're supporting? Are you looking at your training and who is represented in your training and how frequently your trainings are? Are you having conversations in your sinks? Could this be something that opening up your staff meeting is a conversation of, what did you learn this week about being anti-racist? That simple question to see what people are doing, it holds folks accountable and you can implement it in your structures. So how are your structures combating racism? These are all questions that you should be asking yourselves and auditing your organization and continuing to improve. It's not one level. It's not interpersonal, only the interpersonal microaggressions that I experience in the workplace. It's who I see in leadership. It's who I see. It's through all levels. So I think that you have to audit your organization to see how inclusive it is. And then if you notice gaps, respond and take action. Megan, who is our CEO at Torrance Learning, is actually looking at our vendors and who we partner with and how we're starting to diversify that roster. Decide where your money goes, right? Like, that's a really easy way to start investing in Black and Brown people. Look at the ways that you're recruiting and your recruiting sources. If you're only looking at a source that doesn't have a lot of folks of color in it, then start looking at recruiting sources that prioritize folks of color. Just start thinking about your systems and processes and how they either perpetuate or dismantle racism. Those would be my thoughts on what to do next. Happy to continue that conversation, but I love what you said, Nyla, about, like, it's not always our job to tell you what to do next. All I can do is tell you who I am, what I'm experiencing, and you need to do that listening, that deep listening and listening to understand and not listening to be dismissive and defensive of what you've been doing.
Also, it's okay to make a mistake and to be wrong. I think people are also concerned, if I release this thing and it doesn't address everything correctly the first time, I'm wrong. But when you release a new course, a new training, it goes into, you know, your assessment and evaluation phase. So just be honest and transparent with people. We're trying to get this right. If there's anything that's wrong or that we need to fix, then how do we do that? It's simple as that. Mm-hmm. Failure is a really key tool in what we do. And so understanding that, I think, and being comfortable in that discomfort and not being right is going to be really important.
Mm-hmm. So ladies, I'm looking at the questions that were posted. There's an interesting question here. It says, how can or should white people balance using our privilege to advocate, lift up others, and also avoid white centering? So I think that's an interesting question, right? How do you use your privilege? That's like, anytime I hear that, like, how do I use my white privilege? I'm thinking, like, how do I use my bankroll, right? That's kind of like that. It's like, how do I use my $1 million to, you can't, right? Like, it's, you can't throw money at it. I think, yeah, like this whole thing about, we have terms, right? We always hear buzzwords like white privilege and white, black rage and, you know, hothead Latinas, and we hear like all these buzzwords and these terms and these labels that we apply to each other. I think that, as I mentioned before, I think if we look at this as a collective responsibility, right? It's not just a white person's responsibility. It's not just a Black person's responsibility. It's not just a Hispanic person's responsibility. I think if we join collectively, and it shouldn't be done in silos. It shouldn't be like white people are doing this, Black people are doing this, mm-hmm. Hispanics. No, that does not work. We all know mm-hmm. that working in silos does not work. I think what we really need to do, if you feel that if you feel that you have white privilege, you know, it is not a disease. It is a symptom of your personality. And if your circumstance, right, it's just like your upbringing, like you cannot change your upbringing. And you also were probably born into, you know, we don't pick who we're born into or what race we're born into. Although my grandmother would say differently, you know, I think what we need to do is like stop trying to figure out like what can white people do alone? What can Black people do alone? What can can we collectively work together, right? And unite and figure out together how do we fix things? What are some actions that we can take to fix things? So if you're looking to use your white privilege, I would say, and if you feel you have white privilege, I would say find yourself some groups that you can align to that are diverse, that have diverse voices, and figure out what is the problem they're trying to solve, what are the issues that they're trying to address, and help work towards a solution there. Do not create, I got invited to, so on Facebook, I got invited to a white women for BLM, and I was like, fuck off. Like, no, like I'm not joining your Facebook group, right? Had they done a women, you know, for BLM, it's more inclusive. We're going to see a lot more diversity. I don't want to be your token, you know, minority mm-hmm. in there. Let's work together and let's have a conversation. I think through conversation, we figure things out. I think also with the whole, you know, Black Lives Matter initiative going on, I've been a little disappointed also because they have opportunities to get to the table to have conversations, and they're not coming with their demands or what they want to see changed. And that's just been very disappointing to me. Let's create together, like, what are the things that we want to change together? Let's identify that. And then let's try to work towards some change there. So BLM is Black Lives Matters. Sorry, using mm-hmm. acronyms here. Black Lives Matter is not only about Black people. There are a lot of Hispanics that are also in that movement, because Hispanics are Afro-Latinos, Afrocentric also. So it's very interesting, you know, that we have this opportunity to raise our voice, and we're not doing it properly.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think that, so we've gotten to most of the questions that were submitted through the chat. There are lots of, how do we help people the final question is, how do we help people understand the issues of today about Black economics, that these impacts today are the collateral consequences of stolen body and stolen land and stolen humanity. I think that I would say, like, think of it as we're doing a race, and some groups had a 400 year head start. And in addition to that head start, there were resources that center on their experiences, that normalize their experiences, and now you're throwing us in the game. Sometimes, like, when you think about money and wealth and think about it that way, there is a 400-year head start that we are trying to close that gap. And I'm not sure how to close that gap. But I do think that that's something we should be reflecting on and thinking about. I don't know if my other panelists have a thought on the economies and how that.
I'm not an economist. I have my views on capitalism. This is where we live in. This is the structure that we've built. I just think it's, first of all, I have to be honest about our history. I mean, the way we're taught things to begin with is problematic. And that, you know, I'm just trying to help people in L&D. And that's a whole other thing to also break into the schools. But that's, again, what my collective is trying to do, is start from kids, like, mm-hmm. what are you being taught about your history? So I think that's going to be important too. In terms of, like, I guess that question's asking, like, how do we explain maybe why Black people, why there's an income gap, or mm-hmm. why there are disparities in their economics in general and livelihoods and all of that. That's a huge conversation. That is not something that's totally different from what we're talking about here. But that's kind of like what I am trying to stress to you guys. And what Jessica mentioned earlier is that we can talk about police brutality, but then there's, like, so much other stuff. And that's what we mean by systemic. Like, people, there's racism, there's your racist grandmother who believes things, and then there's a systemic issue of racism that runs very deep. And we're talking specifically here about about American racism. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm a first generation American, my parents are Caribbean, my parents are from Trinidad. There's racism there. It looks different because whiteness is not dominant there. The dominant races are Black and Indian. And mm-hmm. so the racism exists everywhere. Anti-Blackness exists everywhere. Racism looks different in different countries. Anti-Blackness is pretty much the same everywhere. And the reason that this is important for all races, I may say anti-Blackness, but it seeps into your culture, into systems, in a way that affects everybody. So that's why I center talking about anti-Blackness, because the way that it permeates our systems mm-hmm. affects you, whether you're Asian, white, Black, however you identify, Indigenous. So I don't want people to think that I'm not concerned about the struggles of people of other races. What I do know is that anti-Blackness is the disease that starts it all, in my opinion.
White yeah. supremacy.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. So my sister, guys, is very dark. So we are like night and day. That's always the comment we get. Like, when people see us together, they're like, that's your sister? And so you're right, it comes down to color, right? So because I am of a lighter skin tone than my sister, mm-hmm. I am afforded more opportunities. Also mm-hmm. because of my name is not Hispanic. I don't have a Hispanic name. People aren't able to label me right off the bat before they see me. Mm-hmm. And it's just very interesting that, you know, again, racism is everywhere. Mm-hmm. and you're right, Nyla, I told you, like, Hispanics are racist against other Hispanics. Like, it's just craziness. You know, in, I would say color also, like, we know on the island that if you're darker, you're going to have less opportunities afforded mm-hmm. to you. Like, mm-hmm. it's unfortunate. It's like, poor baby, you're dark. You are going to be subjected to some additional struggles, right?
Yeah.
And so I think here in the U.S., it's just, like, really bad because at least, like, on the island, we don't have a systemic oppressive, system. It's more like people. Here in the States, like, we have a whole system of, like, there's systems, societal constructs that just are designed to oppress non-whites, right? Like, it's just general. It's not even just Blacks, but it's really prolific with Blacks, and that goes back to the Civil War and mandates that even, you know, Abraham Lincoln, who is everyone's hero, he also had races agendas against him, you know. So that's where it perpetuates. Like, it all started with slavery. I'm sorry, like, you know what I mean? It all started with slavery, and we have not been able to eradicate that mentality here in the U.S. And I would say also, like, when we think about the root of a lot of the problems with race here, it has to do, and I'm going to be very blunt about this, it has to do with white people. And I'm not saying all. So again, I'm not going to generalize, guys. But white people in power seeing Black people and Hispanic people with ambition and and rising to some level of status, that's very hard for those dominant people of, you know, that are white. And so that's kind of a root issue that we have here in the US. And it looks like I'm by myself now. I hope not.
No, we're still okay. Here with you. Yeah, I think that we're bringing up conversation. This conversation could go on.
Yeah, it could
on
really go. On. Yeah.
So I like how we, I think that this is a good segue to talk about kind of like how you're feeling in this space, in this moment. Really, I'm grateful for all the conversations. I'm grateful to your point around colorism. I know that as a light-skinned individual, I navigate a different world than my dark-skinned sisters. And some of the actions I take to combat colorism is to always invite and amplify, and sometimes to refuse opportunity, because I know that my voice is often amplified more quickly. And that's something that's pervasive, not only interracially across races, but within the Black community. So I think that that could be its own conversation outside of here. And it seems like there's a lot of interest in that. But I want to know, in this moment, as we wrap up this conversation, how are you feeling? And what, if you could ask what you need from our community, what would that be?
I feel many things. I feel emboldened. I feel more comfortable. I'm in a place now where I don't care what people are thinking right now. And I don't want to work for an organization who's afraid to have these conversations. And so that actually feels good. I don't have that burden anymore of, like Myra says, she's in a space now where she's like, fire me. And I'm kind of like, I'm there. And it feels good to be comfortable enough with myself and know what's important to me. And I know that I do good work and I put good stuff out into the world and that will come back to me. So I'm in a good space about that. I do wish that we could just do our work, and that I was in the middle of upskilling, of doing projects, and I had to put a lot of stuff on pause because I want to talk about these things. And so, a part of me is happy we're here, but I just wish I could also do me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And what I need from my community is for you guys to just sit in whatever feelings that you're in, allow them to wash over you. I'm not telling you not to have them, but to leave space for the Black people in your vicinity, to ask them first if they're in a headspace. I've made that mistake where I was just rallying and I reached out to somebody and they're like, I'm not in that space, girl, to be talking about this. And that was a reality check for me. So I know you want to help, but just ask, you know, hey, are you in a headspace to work on this right now? Because a lot of us, this is trauma. Mm-hmm. It's not just conversations. This is repeated trauma. This is generational trauma. And it's not to be taken lightly, especially when you have to debate your humanity with people that you sit next to at work. So just please leave space for us to figure things out. We are willing to talk. Some of us are willing to help. Some of us aren't. Some of us will never want to work with you. And you just have to be okay with that. And so I just want you to kill your ego. And if you're coming from a genuine place, that's going to be the most important thing.
Awesome. Thank you.
I would just say on my part, let's keep the conversation going. That's what I want from my community, right? It doesn't have to be an overt conversation, but just be mindful. And guys, I get accused of being a hippie all the time, but I'm going to say, let's keep the positive vibes and the good karma and and let's just be kind to each other. And let's really be mindful about how we address each other and how we treat people. Because I can tell you from a race perspective, racism will always be alive and well. I am 50 years old. Racism is still alive and well in the United States. And I feel that it will continue to be alive and well because there's racism everywhere. I think for each of us can do our part and just making sure that whatever we're spreading love and we're spreading positivity and we're being authentic and we're speaking up. And, you know, and as Nyla said, we're not all in the same headspace. And so it's also providing support. Like, what can I do, Nyla, to help you, you know, feel, you know, that you are, that you're feeling safe? Or, you know, is it having a, do you just need to talk? Is it a conversation? So it's, so I think it just, you know, I think that if you're concerned about how your non-white friends are doing, reach out and ask them. Just, and don't ask them like, how do you feel about the current situation? Cause that is not helpful. I would rather just, you ask like, how are you feeling today? Right. Mm-hmm. What's on your mind today? Because sometimes we just need to offload. But if you're going to ask those questions, also be ready for like things you don't want to hear. Right. And just be a willing ear. Like, just listen, listen. You can learn so much from listening.
Awesome. I want to thank both of you for being here. And my ask for our community, my ask is for folks of color today. I want you to recognize that rest, self-care, self-love, healing practices, because we are in a traumatic moment, that is resistance. So I want you all to take a nap today. I'm looking at you, Nyla. I want you all to do something for yourself today, to be a little selfish and recognize that we are all in a traumatic space. And for everyone else, I challenge you to take something you learned from these amazing, amazing humans. Thank you for sharing space with me. Thank you for joining this conversation. I see you, love you. I'm sending you all of the positive vibes. I too am a hippie. Continue the discussion in your own work environments. Take at least one thing that you learned today and put it into action. With that, I'm gonna wrap it up. And thank you all for being here, for your attention, and for your love. Have a really great, powerful day.
Thank you. It was good to see you, Myra.
Yes, Jessica, thank you for moderating. You did such a great job. This is amazing. And Nyla, have a couple drinks, buy yourself a bottle of wine, smoke a joint if you have to, take a nap.
Yes.
Bye. Bye, everyone.